Okay, we got through to the end, and closing out the conference for us, as always, is Chairman and CEO Jeff Immelt. Gee, thanks.
Okay, Nigel, thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's great to be back at Longboat Key, and I'll just start straight away. Five big messages for GE here at the conference. We've got a very strong industrial outlook. We see good margin accretion over the next couple of years. We're getting cash out of GE Capital. We think that's good news. We're in the process of making GE Capital smaller, and that'll continue. We've got investor-friendly capital allocation underway. We're going to take the $4.5 billion special dividend from GE Capital. We're going to put that to a buyback, and we plan to continue growing the dividend in line with earnings. We think we've got a good outlook on cash. We're going to apply it in an investor-friendly way, and we feel really good about how the company's positioned. You've heard a lot of economic reports so far this week, so I don't think ours is going to be all that different. We see the U.S. really, I'd say, a little bit better. Europe continues to be slow and a place we watch. The emerging markets are still pretty good for us, and if in fact they slow down, we think that'll be good for our input prices. The way you kind of run a place at a time like this is you manage your costs hard, you reallocate to the places that are growing, you keep investing in growth. We've got a lot of levers that are good safety levers, excess cash, things like that in case things get worse. I think the year so far is more or less the way we had planned it. All of us had planned for a volatile Europe, and that's more or less what we've gotten. The framework for the company is really unchanged. Industrially, I'd say we think spares in Europe and aviation may push our aviation growth from double digit to single digit, but we think healthcare in the U.S. is doing a little bit better. That could be double digit instead of single digit. Energy's on track. Transportation's on track. Capital's very strong. We see the framework still very positive when I look at 2012 and how we're positioned. When I look at the rest of the company corporate, there's no surprises, I think, in corporate, more or less on track. The operating framework for how we see the year is still very solid. Cash is going to be better because of the dividend and special dividend in GE Capital, so cash will be better than the last time we looked at the framework. From a revenue standpoint, we think industrial organic revenue growth is going to be strong. We'll continue to shrink GE Capital, so the revenue flowing through GE Capital will be probably equal to or slightly lower than planned. On balance, we don't see any big changes in revenue. Then, when I think about the mosaic in terms of what drives GE over the next couple of years, it's on the macro side, it's the growth markets, it's a big backlog, lots of new products. We do well on the trade with oil prices relatively high and gas prices relatively low. Oil prices high drive more consumption of fuel-efficient jet engines. Gas prices low drive more optionality around the power generation cycle. We think commercial real estate will continue to improve. Losses will be good. We have a lot of cash flexibility. I think those were all positives when you do your models for 2014, 2015, 2013, and beyond. The negatives are clearly Europe. My view from a planning assumption is that Europe stays slow for a period of time. It's the fiscal and macro challenges, what happens as those continue to change. From an inflation standpoint, that's both plus and minus, depending on how the global economy goes. We see a decent time period for the company with very strong industrial outlook. I would say capital getting smaller and capital being more profitable in the short term. That's kind of the mosaic for the company. Strategically, we see pretty similar strategy in just driving capital-efficient organic growth. We've got the portfolio that's strong, so we've got a good infrastructure portfolio, specialty finance. We've got adjacencies that we think allow us to continue to drive solid growth in the future. Three big growth initiatives that have been in place for a long time: technology, growth markets, and services, and continue to drive dollars per installed base. and I would say a pretty good investor-friendly outlook. 5% to 10% organic growth. We should have $100 billion of cash to allocate over the next 5 years and expanding returns on total capital. So I think that's pretty much the play we've been running. We think it shapes up pretty well for this cycle, and we like the way we're positioned. Energy is always important for GE. I think what I always need to emphasize is that this is, kind of like not your father's energy business. As you look back 10 years and look at where we are today, this is a broadly diversified energy business. Power generation continues to be important, but we've got a big distributed energy platform, a big energy management platform, a very big oil and gas platform. When I look out over the next few years, we've got some real strengths as it pertains to the natural gas cycle and where we are, a very good outlook, a healthy outlook for our oil and gas business, some new growth segments in places like power conversion. So we've got a lot of good tailwinds. I think the headwinds in the energy business are going to be just none of us are counting on the PTC being extended. We think that's about $0.03 in 2013. And we're still looking at developed markets, what the demand for electricity is going to be. But we should see good, solid double-digit earnings growth for the energy business in 2012, and we think it's very well positioned for continued growth based on the diversified platforms that we have and the very strong global position that we have in this business. The oil and gas business is really, I think, executing well and is very well positioned for the future. I think it's a good illustrative story of the way we think about building out platforms. We've invested in a lot of the fast growth segments in the oil and gas business, things like LNG, subsea, unconventional fuels. We have seen the way we've built the business over time, so from about $1 billion 10 years ago to mid-teens today, expanding margins, pretty disciplined as it pertains to the acquisitions. I think it's the purpose of this chart is not just to show you what we do in oil and gas, but I think it's illustrative to how we think about building franchises over time. We like being in big businesses where we know the customers. We like doing very controlled inorganic moves that are small and focused on technology. We want GE investors to be the ones that accrue the benefit as we add technology and services and globalization. We have ways to bring value. If you look at the oil and gas space, our competitors spend 1% to 2% on R&D. We're able to do things in R&D that they can't do. And then we try to drive operating leverage. If you look at this business, the margin rates are, let's say, 13.5%, 14% in 2011. We don't see any reason why this can't be closer to power generation and aviation over time, which in the 18%-20% range. And so we expect to drive operating leverage in this business as time goes on. So the purpose here is to say not only is oil and gas good, but this is the disciplined way we're going to build franchises going forward in the future. We've got a lot of good franchises already underway, and these are the adjacencies that have driven a lot of the growth over the last 10 years. In the case of molecular medicine, we've built a pretty strong diversified position. Business is growing organically 5%-10%, and we lead in places like bioprocess manufacturing. In areas like aviation systems, we've gotten some of our first tier one applications. Business growing 5%-10%, developing a great position in the business jet space. In areas like mining, I think you've seen us grow. We've got a $2 billion position. We know all of the customers. You saw us do small niche acquisitions last week. I think the way to think about that business inorganically is we would only do small niche acquisitions over time as we built that business over time because we think we can bring a ton of value as that industry continues to unfold. Distributed energy is a high-growth segment. These are gas engines, aeroderivative turbines. These are places like where Waukesha fits as time goes on. And then energy management, you saw us make a move in T&D. When we bought the stake in XD, that's a little bit about China, but it gives us now a competitor that can go toe-to-toe with some of the other players like ABB and Siemens in every corner of the world. So we've got spaces in energy management that we can continue to grow. So this has been, you know, some platforms that we can invest in a very disciplined way and continue to grow over time. GE Capital is just in a good segment or in a good time period right now. The earnings should continue to grow. We think return on investment will get to 2% in the next year or so. We'll continue to shrink the balance sheet. Our focus is going to be on mid-market lending and leasing. Real estate is going to be smaller over time. Consumer is going to be smaller over time. We continue to run off the red assets. And we have real competitive advantage in the businesses we're in. So if you look at the way we originate, the distributed underwriting that we do, the strength we have with mid-market customers, this is a business where we have good competitive advantage as we shrink. Pricing is still good. Disciplines are there. Losses are lower. So you're going to see good, solid earnings growth this year. I would say commercial real estate providing some upside. And then we'll continue to shrink this business going into 2013 and beyond. But we like the way GE Capital, from an industry standpoint, inside the industry, we have really strong competitive advantage and are well-positioned going forward. Big initiatives inside the company lead with technology. We invested through the downturn, and we are somewhere between 5%-6% of investment as a percentage of our industrial revenue. That will come down over time. You know, in other words, the percentage of industrial revenue in R&D has started to come down. And I think the good news for investors is the pipeline is really quite full. We've got a tremendous amount of big new systems that we're launching. We're filling in product gaps that can drive incremental growth. We've got innovative new segments like energy storage. We've invested in manufacturing technology. So I think these are the years where investors are going to reap benefits financially from the investments we made in technology. So this is going to drive a big chunk of our organic growth in the next few years. And we're very well-positioned technically in the markets that we're in. A key one there that's really all about technology is aviation. And we continue to really run the tables and do a great job in this segment. So the installed base continues to grow. We continue to have share growth in the segments that we're playing in. And if you just look at the right-hand side of the page, it's just some of this is just arithmetic. So if you look at the GEnx engine, which is on the Boeing 747, the 787, we've got 100% market share of the 747. We've got in the mid-60s market share of the 787. We've got a fuel burn advantage versus the competitor. On the LEAP, we've got 100% market share of the MAX. We've got a 53% market share of the campaigns on the NEO. And we've got 100% market share of the C919. So when we look out at the next 10 years in aviation, we will have higher market share than we had the last 10 years. And this is not just I was talking about this. This isn't just a quarter or two. This is the next generation of commercial aviation that we're executing on. Beyond that, I review our manufacturing and cost position on these engines a lot. I like the progress we're making on composites. It's very strong, coming down the cost curves very well. So this is what technology is all about, is winning in these big systems and building strong competitive advantage. Globally, we continue to see a good story in our industrial revenue in the key growth markets. You guys sat with John Rice. Some of you were there in Rio. You got a chance to see, you know, the strength of the franchise. I think we've invested in people. We're investing in capability. We're investing in these big relationships. And we're just building a great platform. And I think, like technology, this is a place where GE is going to have strong leadership. You know, we divide the world into the resource-rich parts of the world. That's the biggest part of our growth platform, still growing very well, and what we call Rising Asia, which is China, India, ASEAN countries. China, we're still seeing great growth. India definitely slowed down. And ASEAN continues to be pretty strong. So that's, you know, that's kind of the global panorama and how we see it. Six things we do as we try to win around the world. The first one is we prioritized winning in the resource-rich parts of the world. So we prioritized Latin America, Australia, Canada, Africa, Russia, places like that. And we just have big wing-to-wing leadership. If you go to a place like Latin America now, if you go to a place like Brazil, You see multiple sites, you see great teams, project management, tremendous skill sets, and doing very well. I think we play China in an intelligent way, right? So we have segments where we win, aviation, healthcare, segments that we have big share positions, not just today, but for a long period of time, where we're winning in a very, very substantial way. Then we have partnerships we're creating where we can use the momentum of China to develop great global platforms. So the avionics joint venture with AVIC, the XD joint venture, these open up new segments for us on a global basis, and I think this combination of market and partnership helps us a lot. We've got world-class partnerships around the world, from Russia to the Middle East to Latin America. We continue to have a great portfolio of geographies. We'll have probably five more countries cross the billion-dollar mark in the next few years. We're planting new flags in places like Myanmar. So we continue to drive global platforms. We have a tremendous low-cost manufacturing base in places that we continue to invest, and we've got market innovation and key new technologies that are going to drive, open up new markets around the world. Dual fuel, power generation, low-cost CT scanners, things like that. So market growth, cost, partnership, long-term investing. I think, again, this is already in place. So, you know, just like technology, we've laid the investments in place. I don't view that we have to do a lot of incremental investing as we go forward. If anything, we're going to be able to drive more efficiency as time goes on, and the organic growth should be there, should come based on the positioning that we've done. And the last big pillar is services. We continue to have a great service franchise. We'll grow the service revenue in the next few years in the high single digit. We think about 8%. We continue to build the backlog. We've kind of won as it pertains to capturing the installed base, adding value, getting on the same side as the customer, things like that. I'd say the next horizon for us that we're excited about in services is some things we can do to help our customers eliminate waste. I show the example up here of an airline where, you know, dollars per available seat mile is the way they measure profitability. And if you think about an airline, a 10% improvement in use of a plane, or let's say 1 hour per week aircraft utilization, doubles an airline's profitability. A 10% improvement in fuel doubles an airline's profitability, and a 10% improvement in maintenance grows their profitability by 30%. So if I look across all the industries we're in and all the customers we're in and the amount of available, I would say, waste reduction, it's in excess of $100 billion. Now, we approach that through $150 billion of service contracts, so we're already hooked up with our customers. And the investments we're making here is in analytics, it's in sensing technologies, it's in all the things that are going to allow us to model our CSAs for more profitability or sell incremental services to our customers as time goes on. And this is something we started over the past couple of years, but I think we're now starting to see some of the benefits and should see even more as time goes on. So if I look at the way these things work, so if you look at CSAs in the oil and gas segment, we've got the opportunity to allow our oil and gas customers to get more utilization, less downtime of what they've got. That allows us to get more price in our CSA. We're building models around our engines so that as a plane is flying into the service shop where it's going to have a repair, you're going to be able to print a bill of material as that plane is underway, so that the service people are going to know exactly what they need to do to that engine when it lands. Tremendous amount of cost and productivity as that comes in. So we think getting, you know, more CSA margin rates through price and cost based on these analytical models is going to be a big improvement going forward. On the right-hand side, we've got some software programs and some analytics that we're selling to the customers outside the CSAs. You know, for instance, we have about a $100 million franchise in fuel optimization on locomotives that get sold outside of the CSA. This is about a 10% improvement in a locomotive that our customers can recognize. And the big enterprise stuff are things like integrated vehicle health management systems, decision support in healthcare. So we've got about a $3 billion software business that's growing 15% a year. This is going to help us grow the dollars per installed base over time by 5 to 10%. and we think we can get about 100 basis points out of CSA productivity as you go through this. We think this is the next leg of services, and we're quite excited about where we're going. Just to wrap up on kind of organic growth. We like a lot about what we're seeing in the first quarter of the year. We saw good organic growth. We saw good global growth. We saw a record backlog, share up in key segments. I think a lot of our leading indicators, when you look forward in terms of the margins on new orders coming in, the installed base growth, the adjacencies that we can continue to fill out like we've done in oil and gas, big pipeline of NPI, we feel pretty good about where we are from a growth standpoint. Even in a volatile environment, I think the investments we've already got in place and the backlog that's been captured makes us feel decent about the positioning and where we are right now. Like we did last year, I'm going to shift gears now and just talk about the things that are on your mind. Last year, kind of areas of specific interest, and we had six areas we talked about last year, and I think on the bottom five, we kind of answered those and kind of improved them and executed, did what we said we're going to do. The ones we carry forward is a look at margins. We're going to talk about the impact of low natural gas. We're going to talk about just enterprise risk in general, but just a brief talk on Europe. We're going to talk about the size of GE Capital and capital allocation. These are the things that I read your notes and listen to what's on your mind. These, I think, are the big things that we want to talk about in the rest of the meeting today. The first one on margins, we continue to make progress. I'd say the split between 12 and 13 is going to be specifically a function of wind turbines. My hunch is we're going to ship more wind turbines in 12. That's going to have a negative mix effect in 12 and fewer in 13. That's going to have a positive mix impact in 13. On balance, the 100 basis points we feel good about, and we'll see good accretion in margin rates in the second half of the year. The whole focus on margins is really going to be about simplification, value gap management, and taking these 40 GE Advantage projects that are really wing-to-wing process projects and applying them to our cost base. We've got very strong, I would say, programmatic focus on productivity and margins that we're going to start seeing in the second half of this year that's going to carry over into 2013 and 2014. Simplification, this is where we look at RTS, G&A as a percentage of revenue. Today in 2011, it's about 18.5%. That's going to go down in 2012. It's going to go down in 2013. It's going to go down in 2014. We're doing this on a very programmatic way. We're targeting $2 billion of cost out in enabling functions in RTS and G&A over the next three years, starting this year, going forward in the next few years. Some's going to happen in Europe as we continue to restructure Europe. We're driving a big focus on global shared services. We've got some consolidation of P&Ls, reduction of layers, indirect expense reduction, and price advantage, and ERP IT consolidation. The way I think about this, guys, is a decade ago, we were 70% inside the U.S., 30% outside the United States. It's almost flip-flop. Some big portion, 40% or 50% of the businesses or the revenue, industrial revenue in the next few years are businesses we weren't in necessarily five or 10 years ago. We just have opportunities to consolidate back rooms and take costs out of the place. We're going to drive that very hard. We've assigned a couple GE officers to do this task, and we think this is going to be a big opportunity, a big boost for margin rates going forward. $2 billion over the next few years. Value gap is always important in our business. We get good price improvement in our service businesses, but continuing focus on pricing and cost out is important. We've seen good price momentum in the first quarter of this year. We think that's going to continue for the rest of the year. Energy will be equaling up, and all the other orders pricing is going to be positive for the year. Healthcare is a little bit of an anomaly just because some of healthcare works on the computer model, so they get a good cost out as it pertains to their sourcing at the same time as pricing. We've got some big programs on the pricing side with energy services in transportation. All of the appliance products that we're launching are going to be higher margin products. We've got a big initiative going on inside the company to eliminate sole source agreements. We've got a lot of dual source activity going on in our supply chain. Again, we think the value gap was very negative last year and really hurt margins. It goes positive this year, and we think the value gap's going to continue to be positive in 2013 and 2014 as we drive these programs and get the order pricing, most importantly, positive year-over-year. That's kind of the trend and what we see right now. Then just programmatically with the G Advantage projects, we've got a lot going on in product cost. Aviation, you guys all know that the type of learning curve that we go down when we launch big new products like the GNX and the LeapX. We've got a big team focused on driving lean labs, accelerating benefits, trying to manage the right volume and really driving these learning curve compression so that we can get more cost out of the engines earlier on. Healthcare, we launch between 70 and 80 new products every year. Big G Advantage project there to make sure that all of the new products have higher margins than the products that they're replacing. We get big CM accretion in terms of healthcare. These are being driven by resources, black belt resources, lean resources inside the company, and we're seeing good progress, and we think this is going to be a good leading indicator in long-term productivity. Services continues to be a big part of how we drive productivity and margins as time goes on, and we've had a good track record of increasing margin rates in our service businesses. We've got a big project going in our locomotive business to have no unplanned downtime. As we're able to do that drives great productivity for our customers and us. In the case of energy, we actually have these bonus backlogs if we can reduce the degradation of the turbine in use. That's where some of these analytical models can improve margin rates, and we've got about a, let's say, a $200 million or $300 million bogey. If we can improve the degradation of the turbine, this is revenue and money that flows to GE. It's another way to drive margins inside the company. Simplification, I think when John was talking to you earlier, he said $1 billion. We've kind of upped that to $2 billion. Positive value gap being led by orders pricing and very strong initiative and programmatic margin focus inside the company, driven in a big initiative called G Advantage that's staffed, underway, building momentum, and should continue to drive the company going forward. I actually feel pretty good about our ability to execute on margins as time goes on. We look forward to proving that to you. Natural gas, everybody can speculate whether the price is going to be $2 or $4 or $5, but I think we've disconnected natural gas from oil for a generation. That disconnection has taken place. People are finding gas all over the place, and you have this weird anomaly of the prices in the U.S. being extremely low vis-a-vis the rest of the world. The combination of all these things drives opportunity in new generation, gas turbine utilization. When I talk about investment in the value chain, what that really is investment in transporting LNG, so it's LNG terminals, things like that. It is the clean fuel, and GE is long these technologies from a power generation, from an extraction, from a transportation. We're even long in things that if there is a broad-scale conversion from other fuels to natural gas over time, we've got technologies in mini LNG and CNG that can help drive that going forward. There's just lots of ways GE can win in this space. I think when you think about, I think the base case has to be that this set of assets grows nicely over the next few years, just based on usage and conversions and things like that. What I tried to do on this page is show the ways that investors can win. The first one is there's an industry forecast of going from, let's say, 50 gigawatts to 60 gigawatts over the next three years. How could that be better if China goes faster? Europe replacements. Russia needs a complete redo of its electricity grid. Japan needs more power. It's got 52 nuclear reactors offline. There's a number of ways where this could work as time goes on. Services, we've got a great $50 billion-plus backlog of services. When we look at just planned outages because this has to sync up with how our customers have scheduled their outages. We see a pretty healthy growth rate in kind of 2013, 2014, 2015 that sync up with how customers are using it. But the usage of the gas turbines is really high right now, so that ought to be good for the service business. Big expansion in distributed energy. The demand for power, transmission and distribution never keeps pace. So there's a big demand for distributed energy, and these are products that are sold globally, aeroderivatives and gas engines. So we see good growth there. And then the fourth one is a Blue Bird. It says, what if several big locomotives went from diesel to natural gas, right? And for us, that is a retrofit opportunity on all the locomotives. It's an LNG, mini LNG opportunity to get the natural gas to the locomotives. And you guys are smart guys. Conversations like this are going on all the time. So turbine sales, service sales, distributed power sales, distribution, right? Transportation sales. That's the way I think about where this could be and what some of the positives could be going forward. Risk is important. Clearly, as you look at the world, I just comment on just enterprise risk. We think about managing a company in terms of people, process, technology, and cash, right? People, we have more domain experts in risk today than we've ever had, focused in an intense way with clear metrics. Process, we've got a risk committee subsegment on the board today, very strong enterprise risk practices that I lead and chair inside the company. So very strong practices there. Technology, big simplification efforts in ERP and IT to simplify the company. And cash, you guys see us have a lot of cash. So I think we've tried to make the company so that we can manage it well and with excellence in a volatile time period like the ones we're living in today. And then in Europe, we've got it's less of a percentage of the company each and every year. This is a chart you've seen before, revenue flat last year. We've done restructuring. There's places in Europe that still aren't bad, Germany and Northern Europe, where we can continue to grow. We'll do more reductions as time goes on. And GE Capital is a secured lender, and we've exited Greek bonds, and we've made the place safer, and it's going to be a smaller part of the company going forward. And if things get worse, we'll be ready for that as well. So that's the way we think about risk management in Europe. GE Capital, we've talked about getting down to $425 billion in investment by the end of this year. We're going to take it lower in 2013. So we're going to continue to shrink the size of GE Capital. We're going to invest in green assets. We're going to have less real estate and consumer as time goes on. We're going to continue to originate at high margins. We're going to take commercial paper down to $25 billion. Because of backup lines and where we are, we're going to need less, let's say, surplus cash in GE Capital. And these are the ways that we're going to run the play. You've read about the dividend. We think in addition to dividends over the next few years, we ought to be able to get $20 billion of excess cash coming out of GE Capital. We've already seen $4.5 billion. So we think there's another, let's say, 15-plus that can come out of GE Capital on excess dividends as time goes on, in addition to the standard earnings dividend. So we're going to get some cash out. We're going to make it smaller. We're going to drive the returns. We're going to be good in places. We're going to be smaller in other places. And this is just the play we're going to run in GE Capital going forward. So that's kind of consistent with where we've been. We're going to do it in ways that's under our control. In other words, I think we want to execute. We want to do what we say. Just like we've done the last 3 years, we want to keep on that path where we tell you what's in our control, what we can do, and then go execute on it and keep doing that. That's kind of the way I think about GE Capital going forward. And that leads to capital allocation. This is the $100 billion kind of magic pot. And this comes from dividends from GE Capital, industrial cash flow, getting cash out of NBC as time goes on. And the way I think about it is we got plenty of capital to grow the company. We're going to keep growing the dividend in line with earnings. We think the vast majority of our investors like the dividend. We're going to do bolt-on acquisitions in the $1 billion-$3 billion range. We still get mentioned every time somebody breathes on doing stuff, but this is what we're going to do. We're going to do one, three. We like doing single point bolt-on acquisitions. We're going to stay on that strategy. We think it's in the best interest of the company, and I hope I make that as clear as possible on that. And then we're going to buy back stock. We're going to reduce the float of the company, and a lot of the dividends that we get over time from GE Capital that are surplus dividends are going to go to be reducing the float. So I think a balanced investor view, a pretty focused execution view, and that's just how we run the place, and I think what we talk about going forward. So just to wrap up, this is a chart we've used in the past, a little bit changed today. I think we've got a very good industrial outlook. When I sit around and look at it, we've got any company as big as ours always has puts and takes, but I think we see energy continuing to grow kind of into 13 at the same pace we've seen in 12. So, we feel good about how energy is positioned. And, you always have a ticket that says, you're long in natural gas. Natural gas feels good. If there's upside, incremental upside, we're gonna benefit from that incremental upside. Healthcare, it's all an emerging market growth story and having good products that can gain market share in the marketplace. Transportation very strong, high market shares, good global position, a good aviation cycle where we are right now. I worry a little bit about spares in Europe, but the rest of the world seems pretty good, and we're launching good new products there. Acquisitions, so you do them 1 year, you kind of get them right the next year, and probably the year two or year three is where you start seeing margins accrete and stuff like that. So 13 ought to be a good year for acquisitions. And then, when's going to be bad next year, right? I mean, that's just, I'd say the good news for you guys is that we've kicked butt this year. Our market share, we'll probably have in excess of 50% market share in the U.S. this year. The 1.6 is good, and it's probably, our yields, our manufacturing's been outstanding. So we'll do even better this year, and it'll be a 3-cent headwind next year as that thing unwinds. And the good news is we've done it with a very, we've never been vertically integrated in wind. We've always been broadly de-verticalized. The workforce that's assembling a lot of the gas turbines are temporary workers. So we don't have a big hangover as this thing goes up and down, and our products are good, right, with high quality. Capital, I'm thinking capital is maybe single-digit growth next year instead of double-digit as we shrink it, and I think that's probably the prudent thing to do for our investors. We think good margins are going to continue. Commercial real estate, this is all, we could grow this double-digits if we want. But I think we're just going to make the choice. In other words, our margins are good, and, if you just were able to look at financial services in isolation, we have less competitors today than we've had in a long time. But it's a tough neighborhood, and so we're just going to continue to shrink this and get cash out of it, and we're going to have a good buyback both this year and next as you look forward. So I think for 13, we like it. Profile maybe a little bit different, and there's good strategic reasons why we're doing the things we're doing. So that is the GE story. So happy to, since Steve got tagged to be the new leader of EPG, since you've gotten the, Nigel goes first, yeah.
Jeff, this is the idiot.
So Nigel, you go first, and then Misery Loves Company.
The quick question on the mix between buybacks and M&A. It looks like you've got about $45-50 billion of capital to allocate to those two areas. You've said, your ambition is to reduce the share count to pre-2008 levels. But given the current multiple from yourself, do you have ambitions to reduce? Let's assume that you don't get benefits from multiple for the next couple of years. Do you have an ambition to reduce it much further than that?
Good. I think the good news is we're going to have a lot of cash. I think that's great. Nigel, I like the platforms that we had to invest in. I just think, by this time I've had the opportunity to study what we do well and what everybody else does well on M&A, right? And to study it in multiple different ways. And so we have a huge game board, and we think a lot about M&A, and we spend a lot of time talking about it. I just think these single point deals, I look at what we've done in oil and gas. We've generated a tremendous amount of shareholder value. We've actually built a huge growth platform, and our returns on total capital are 16%. So I just think that's the right vision to have for GE. And, We love dividends. We think the stock's a good value right now. If we do more, we do more. You know, we don't have any aspiration to do big deals right now. We got a lot on our plate. We got a lot of good execution. I think we got margins. I want the team very focused on margins. You know, we end an LTIP this year. LTIP's long, a three-year incentive plan. We start a new three-year incentive plan in 2013, 2014, 2015, you know, margins are going to be right there. Our guys know what they need to do, and we like the spaces we're in. I think if it ends up being more than that, we do more than that. Stock's, I think, a pretty good investment right now. Why not?
Pretty good.
Yeah. Good.
You can amend it. Okay, there you go. You could amend the pretty good comment if you want.
Yeah, good.
On the-
Steve, can you get us to a new venue, man? I mean, you know, I know some of you have grown to like this place, but.
Yeah. No, we're going to keep the focus on GE right now.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Good.
We will be doing a survey, as I mentioned, to everybody to get input.
Okay, good.
That survey will take action as appropriate.
Yeah.
I think you guys are going to think. On the margin side, on page 19, I think I saw 30 to 50 basis points expansion. As I recall, the last two sessions at least I had, it was more to the point of 50.
Yeah.
Can you maybe just elaborate a little?
More wind volume.
It's all with that.
100%. 100% more wind volume.
Okay. All right.
100%. That next year, better. This year, I hate to be trite, but headwind this year because it's just mix. That's really because our plants are, we've got the orders, the plants are more efficient. We'll get more out this year.
Contingency, there weren't other offset or something?
Yeah. We still get good contingency, Steve. I just think, I'd love to beat it, but I think the revenue could be hot, and it could be at lower margin, and it's hard to manage a macro mix on a company this size. I think we've upsized the simplification from $1 billion to $2 billion.
Okay.
I think we're thinking 12 looks good from a standpoint of where we are right now, and 13 is going to get a little bit more turbocharged on margins.
Okay. On the margin, just on the whole OPI side, we heard some of your competitors again talking about pricing gas turbines. Can you give us a sense for where that is, where it's headed, and also how your view of sort of those orders coming in 2013 versus 2014 and 2015?
I think the OPI on just gas turbine units was slightly down in Q1. My hunch is it'll be a little bit better than that in Q2. There's always a lot of puts and takes in the market and stuff like that, but I think price down has stabilized and is starting to get a little bit better.
2013 versus 2014.
Again, you know how the cycle works. We go from commitments to orders to shipments, and that cycle is 12 or 18 months, right? If you get a good, first quarter was pretty good, second quarter should be better, stabilization taking place, that bodes well for 2013 product shipments, right? Again, I don't want to be defensive about it. Our sales of heavy-duty gas turbines are important to all of us, to you and to me. This is a broadly diversified company. We get a lot of price in our service businesses. We get good price in the aeroderivatives and stuff like that. There's other things that are also important. Yes, Scott.
Jeff, just to follow up on gas turbines a bit. Can you talk a little bit about baseload gas and your positioning here? I mean, you've alluded to kind of re-rolling out the H-Series, and I think six or seven years ago, we used to talk about H, and then it went radio silent for a while, and now we're talking about it again. Maybe just on top of that, just talk a little bit about your expectations for market shares. If you had 50% share in the last bubble, if you will, can you get share anywhere close to that with kind of the product?
Look, I think that's a great question. It's exactly the right question, I'd say, Scott. We'll do a big block flex gas turbine. Already underway, already commitments on it. Again, I think the way to think about big block is, it's China and it's U.S. someday, right? It's when it replaces coal is when that comes in. We'll do a big block flex turbine that's kind of H-ish size with flex capability as well. And then, you know, I'd say the right market share for us is in the, you know, 45-50% range. That's kind of where we run. You know, there's always big units one way or the other. I think Siemens is, you know, more or less in the same neighborhood, maybe a little bit less than us. We maybe nose them out. And I think the two of us are, you know, go toe-to-toe in every corner of the world. I don't have anything negative to say about MHI or Alstom, other than that they're not as good as we are. Maybe, I don't know. In other words, we study them, we know them, we know what they're doing, we study their products, we don't take them for granted. But, you know, this is a game of execution, supply chain, trust, product performance, all that stuff, and that's what gives it a pretty high barrier to entry. And we do think about it a little bit in terms of what's the right market share, you know, to have, and it you know, what countries you want it in and stuff like that.
And just to follow up, Jeff, I think there were several new slides on kind of your competitive positioning in GE Capital and made some new comments about how you will shrink it over time, of course. I mean, at what point can you actually start to sell some assets? And what I mean is, you know, you had things on the table like private label credit cards before, obviously,
yeah.
Maybe a business we could all argue it's not ideal in the portfolio. I mean, when do you see the liquidity window being open enough that you could sell?
Yeah, Scott, I think another great question. I think it's still not yet, you know. And you know, clearly you guys know we've got good experience on multiple capital markets transaction type things. So we know how to do an IPO. We know how to do joint ventures with exits. All those are on the table. And, look, I would say, you know, there's always a lot of conversation on retail finance. You know, look, we're going to do what's in the best interest of investors on retail finance. We're going to do it in our control. If it makes sense to keep it, we'll keep it. If it makes sense not to keep it, we'll do that too. You know, we run it well. We've run it very well. It's been better than we thought, but it's not one of those things that, you know, we don't think strategically about all the time. And I think to your point earlier, the markets are still volatile. So, you know, and the last thing I want to do is I think the one thing we've done is we basically, over the last few years since the crisis, we told you what we're going to do and we did it. And I think what we don't want to do is start kind of saying, getting out too far in things that aren't in our control. And I just think that's why, but, you know, smaller, more focused, good margins, better liquidity profile, less commercial paper. That's all the stuff we think we want to do in financial services.
Yeah, right.
Jeff, I want to talk to you about or ask you about your stock and earnings power. And you, as you point out, you have a very different asset base than you did 4 or 5 years ago. 2007, you reported a little bit over $2. We're in a different world. I'm not asking about 2013, but after you put in that $2 billion of cost outs, two things. First of all, tell us how much of that is over and above integration plans on things you've done. What is your blue sky and what you think the earnings power is today of General Electric with all the assets you have in a good economy? I'm trying to tie that into timing where we could see your dividend get back to the $1.24 it used to be.
Look, I think it starts with the industrial assets, and, you know, I think if you said, I think the company we have, you know, Brian, is capable of growing organically at a multiple of GDP. Let's say 5 to 10%. Why? You know, we're in pretty good businesses that are growing. We've got a good balanced exposure to the growth markets. We've got good market shares. We've got investment platforms. We've got investment platforms that could be accretive over time, like oil and gas has been. You know, we could grow in mining. We could do other things like that. And then, you know, when I sit down and triangulate what kind of margin rates the company should have as time goes on, it's higher than we are today. I think if you guys took, like, the bubble off the table, right, if you look at the late 90s, early 2000s, that was a bubble. And say, okay, now how do you, in a decent market, could you be a couple hundred basis points, 100, 200, 250 basis points higher than we are today? Yeah, maybe. We ought to be hunting that, given the platforms that we have. Then you got some excess cash that you can buy back stock, right? And you've got some good cash generation that you can drive the dividend, and that's industrial, right? And then GE Capital is just arithmetic. I think it's ending that investment times ROI. And you know, you guys, in my mind, you can model your perfect GE, you know, and say, do the math, and it ought to be this investment size at this ROI, and hopefully you get this kind of cash out of it. You know, but I think we want to run the company to have good organic growth, good reliable organic growth, accreting margins.
I want to follow up on that a little bit. I mean, there's growth and recovery. They're not the same thing, but
I understand that you're not responsible for predicting the world, but just let's talk about the actual potential earnings power of what you have. And then if you could address that $2 billion, is that over and above the integration expectations on deals you've done, or does it include deals that you've done the last couple of years?
You know, I would say, Brian, it's basically over and above, but it might include some of the deal integration at the same time. I mean, in other words, when I talk about the $2 billion, it's taking the readiness to serve G&A down by, and then, look, I just can't predict the markets. You know, I just don't know. Look, I read your notes, right? I read your notes, and some guys talk about long cycle, short cycle. I don't know what cycle we're in, you know? I think just the classic definition of what used to comprise cycles in this economic world of, you know, used to be a cycle would be consumer-driven, where the Fed would raise interest rates or lower interest rates based on inflation, that in the olden days, right, like 5 years ago. Today, you know, it's emerging markets. It's more fiscal than monetary. It's the emerging market consumer, not the U.S. consumer. So it's hard for me to predict broad economies. I'll come back to you, Jeff. Let me go over Terry. Give the left side here.
Yeah, Jeff, maybe sort of clarification, the single-digit, not double-digit growth in 13 on capital. You talk about GE Capital net income.
Yeah.
That's essentially talking about. And then in terms of shrinkage of the book, what sort of framework might you advise us with there as you think about it?
You know, Terry, we're going to give you a better perspective on that as the year goes on. You know, I think it's got to be under our control. It'll be orderly. It won't be, you know, dramatic unless markets really open up and get a lot better than they are right now. But just steady. Think about it in terms of being steady reduction, much less commercial real estate, and then all the global mortgage stuff and a lot of the other consumer stuff, you know, gone as quickly as we can.
Okay.
So steady decline.
And then lastly, hate to drag the conversation down with a pension question, but, you know, you've got a pretty significantly underfunded plan relative to peers. It's not really an item on your use of cash.
It's included in the bottom bar there, Terry. So, in other words, when I showed what it takes to operate the company, we envisioned pension as part of that. And I think it's, you know, in the highly manageable range, and then at some point in this forecast period, it actually starts going down again. The funding starts going down. So I view that as being highly manageable. Yeah, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff. Just two questions. First, on the capital dividend, backing into what you did, kind of the notion of the arithmetic, it looks like you're targeting a 10% Tier 1 ratio kind of year-end 2012. I'm just wondering, you know, the guidance of another 15 to 20 to come out would maybe suggest you don't think that can go lower. And I just wonder, do you actually think you can bring that Tier 1 ratio down as you actually shrink the book and maybe free up more cash?
You know, Jeff, the real answer to that is we just don't know. You know, I think we are where we are for right now. Your math's not bad as you think about it. I think $20 billion ought to be doable. And then depending on where the size is and how much more cash we have, it could be more than that as time goes down. But that's not a bad, you know, that's not a bad way to think about it.
Yeah. The second one, maybe a little bit tougher question, but, you know, there's a lot of debate on, you know, U.S. gas turbines and coal retirements and how that all plays out. I mean, clearly you guys would prefer not to have had Homer City put back to you, but to see you willing to put $750 million into a 2-gigawatt coal plant kind of suggests, you know, that maybe the notion of all these coal plants going offline doesn't hold, or there's some other reason to make this.
You know, Jeff, I think it's a good question. I think that tended to be just about Homer City. Look, I would say don't ask me or Peter Lozier or people like that. Talk to U.S. utility CEOs. If, you know, I would urge you guys, don't talk to me. Talk to them. And if you find one that's going to build a new coal plant, you call me, okay? I'll buy you dinner. Look, I would ask Tom Fanning and those guys, you know, and you'll hear a pretty compelling story on just how profound the conversion is going to be. Now, the demand for electricity is still not that great in the U.S., and there's a bunch of other things, but if you guys had 30
utility CEOs here today, you wouldn't be having one conversation about, you do what you got to do to meet the EPA standards, but gas is king right now. Great, Dean.
Thanks, Jeff. Going back to GE Capital, data point you just gave was interesting, bringing commercial paper down to $25 billion. That's a quarter of where you were at the peak. So as you take
that... We're AAA.
Exactly. Now, just put that in context. How much of that is because of the shrinking book? Are you going to do more term?
I think we're going to do more, deposit-taking, more alternative funding. You know, in other words, what we want to do is diversify. This has... You know, people love giving us commercial paper, and the rates are low and stuff like that. I just think it's just the right place to be. And I think it fits with where the company is right now. And so we've got alternative funding that's going to be available to us.
And then just to follow up on the news last week regarding the resumption of the dividend from GE Capital, it was 30, not 45%, and you're in a tough spot because GE Capital cannot buy back stock, but you got the go-ahead on special dividend, and there's an expectation there's a lot more to come. Is that 30%, you think, capped over the near term? I know the Fed won't say explicitly, but it's
sort of
like...
I just think it's one of those things that... we'll sort out over time. It's just these things are private. I think our judgment was, in the end, to be in line with the big banks is not a bad place to start. I think that plus the specials will be good for the stock over time, and we'll just sort the rest of it out as time goes on. Great. Do one more right here.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I know you want to do, the shrink of GE Capital on your own terms and wait for market conditions to be right and things, but, do you have a general timeline in your head of when you'd like to see GE Capital closer to 30% rather than north of 40?
There's just so many things that are out of my control on that it's hard to make predictions. What I will say is that we've got a good industrial outlook. As we shrink, the returns are still pretty good. And what I'd like to do is I'd like that to take care of itself both by industrial improving and by capital shrinking, to hit that right. But it's just hard to predict the exact time period. But I think in general, smaller is better. And we'll get to the right point as time goes on.
But it's at some point, right? That's going to take a long time, right? If you're growing GE Capital high singles, it's going to take a long time to redo the mix. And even if you sell off some red assets, those things aren't making any money, right? So you are open to...
Definitely.
Yeah.
No, definitely. I just think it's the last thing I don't know if you guys want me to do is announce big dispositions that are out of my control.
Right.
In a market that's like the one we're in today. That is not investor friendly. And so we're going to do it in a smart, clever, investor-friendly way.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, thanks, guys. Thanks.